Uncover from CBC Podcasts brings you award-winning investigations year-round. Infiltrate an international network of neo-Nazi extremists.
He ranted with racist language.
Discover the true story of the CIA's attempts at mind control.
Their objective was to wipe my memory.
Or dig into a crypto king's mysterious death and $250 million missing.
There are deep oddities in this case.
With episodes weekly, Uncover is your home for in-depth reporting and exceptional storytelling. Find Uncover wherever you get your podcasts. This is a CBC podcast.
Can you hear that off in the distance? The gentle grunt and snort? That is the sound of bison. This is just a 20-minute drive from the towers of downtown Calgary. It's the Sutinet Nation, and right in the center is their buffalo paddock. Clayton Whitney is the manager.
There's one there, that's a yearling heifer. And then we have some yearling bulls out there, and then those ones you can see there are breeding bulls. And then way out in the distance there that you can see the little dots, those are the herd out there. And you'll see all the new babies, and yeah, we have 80 to 100 on the ground right now, so we're hoping for 160 this year. So it's when you're out there with them, you just kind of brings you back to, you know, you think back like 100 years ago when they're even, I guess more than that, when they were roaming North America and there was no fence lines or anything, and they just, you can see it just in this paddock here, the different vegetation that grows and that out here compared to like across the road, right, and just what they naturally bring to the land. They're a sharp-hooved animal, so like elk and deer and moose, so every time they're walking they're actually puncturing the ground. As they're going, they're pretty much seeding the ground with their manure and just walking on the ground, so just brings so much back to the land. It's amazing how much animals want to come on this side of the fence with the bison. We get everything from cougars and bears and moose and deer, elk, and but on the other, like across the road, you don't see as much as that, you know, those different medicines and sweet grass and like buffalo grass and just stuff that they smudge with. And there's like raspberries, saskatoons, stuff like that grow, and it's like pretty much like a park, right? It's untouched, and they're just on there and bringing back to the land.
So to get up close to the bison, you need a lift with one of the workers. Brendan Starlight takes us out to the spring pasture in his rugged ATV.
This is a Kubota, like side by side, like you probably see him on the football games throwing out the players and stuff.
What I was told is, you know, like back in the day, you look at the buffalo, that's your Walmart, that's your Safeway, that's your Sobeys, you know? It's everything you needed right there back 100, 200 years ago.
We come to the high fence, and there are the bison.
It does feel like they're kind of taking back part of this land. And you can just see them off in the distance in the hills, kind of through the trees and through the mist and the smoke. Utterly unconcerned about us, just kind of doing their thing. How many are here?
I think it's roughly around 300. 70 or something like that.
And a lot of calves, right? A lot of babies.
Yeah, we're trying to shoot for like 160, I think, but you know, wildlife, can't depend on it. Try to minimize the losses as best as you can, but
it's neat to see. I mean, there's something really interesting about them being reintroduced.
Yeah, it's exciting for us. Like, we're
We like to see different nations and different reserves get buffalo. And had quite a few just this past year come up and check out our herd and our setup and try to learn from us. So it's pretty exciting.
So there's other nations that come and see what you're doing?
Yeah, we'll be going to Onion Lake next Monday to help them. They came up last fall.
What do you think it means for the community to have access to these animals?
I think it's an opportunity for healthy living and, you know, to be able to get rid of, like, I guess some of the sicknesses that come with, you know, just our diet.
That's great. Thanks, man.
There was a time when as many as 60 million bison roamed the Great Plains. Travelers described hearing the sound of their hoofprints before they saw them, like distant thunder. Bringing them back is crucial, says Violet McGinnis. She's the consultation director for the Sutina Nation.
We always tell people, you have to know what happened to us, how it shaped our people. And when the buffalo was first taken away, and you know, our way of life was severely impacted, because now we used to follow the buffalo, we used to, wherever it roamed and we followed it, we lived, we got everything off the buffalo. And then the newcomers came, and then the treaties were signed, and we were put on little tracts of land, and we couldn't follow the buffalo, but the buffalo wasn't gone there anyway. And then eventually when the buffalo came back to us, it was just I look at it as it was a sign that we will continue to. And you know, I come from parents who both went through Indian residential school, and I know the loss was significant. Not only, you know, our source of food, our source of sustenance, our source of, you know, our culture, that was all taken away, but the Indian residential schools also took away our languages. And so now we're struggling, and we're working hard to bring everything back. So when we say we're bringing back everything, that's, I mean, we're talking about the language, the culture, how we do things, even our names. We're starting to reclaim our names, and we're starting to reclaim our, an animal that meant so much to us, and we're bringing it back. It's fulfilling. Because our spirituality is so dependent on our connection with the land, the animals, it just like it makes us whole again.
Violet is one of the advisors on another bison reintroduction project at Banff National Park. That started in 2017 with just 16 animals, but they've settled in so well that after calving season is done this year, the number will be closer to 100. Salman Rashid is the field unit superintendent for Banff National Park, and I had the chance to speak with him in our Calgary studio.
Good morning, and thanks for being here.
Good morning, Matt. It's nice to meet.
Tell us about the roots of this project. Where did the idea for reintroducing bison into the park come from?
Sure. Well, Parks Canada has been a real leader in bison conservation over the past number of years. And so in the early 1900s, a lot of listeners probably don't know that the Government of Canada bought 700 disease-free bison from a rancher in Montana. And they took those bison and put them in Elk Island National Park and another park that's no longer with us near Wainwright called Buffalo National Park. Mm. The bison in Elk Island thrived. And since that time, Elk Island served as a stock for bison for reintroductions in Canada, Montana, as far away as Russia, and Alaska. But since 1997, we've been thinking about wild bison in Banff National Park. And after much planning and much strategizing, working with our partners, including Indigenous partners, stakeholders, the province of Alberta, we finally decided to put the plan into fruition. And in 2017, we truckloaded up 16 bison from Elk Island National Park, flew them in containers to Banff National Park and reintroduced them.
And the goal, I mean, I want to talk about what's happened, because this has been a huge success story. But at its heart, the goal of the project was what? I mean, what is gained from having bison back in that park?
Right. So as you probably know, ecological integrity is Parks Canada's primary mandate. It's enshrined in our legislation. And ecological integrity simply means that the plants and animals for a respective area appear in that area. And we know from our Indigenous partners that bison form part of their stories for millennia. So we knew bison were on that landscape. So reintroducing bison into Banff National Park was really part of meeting the agency's mandate to maintain and protect ecological integrity, but it also strengthened those indigenous connections and partnerships that we had with people. So the ultimate goal was to maintain and restore ecological integrity, but also there's so much cultural and spiritual use with bison on the landscape, that was also a goal as well.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart MacLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share two hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been out to see them?
I have.
What is it like to see them out there? I don't know. Where would you see them? Like, how difficult is it in that footprint to find them?
It's not easy. And so they're on the eastern slopes of Banff National Park. So access to that site is already difficult. And we've made that intentionally so because we wanted a wild ranging herd. And this original 5 years was really a pilot project. And so we didn't want sort of the interference of public safety and other issues to kind of conflate that introduction. They're on the east slopes, as I said. Getting to them is a challenge, but seeing them is magical.
Right? Magical.
Magical. Yeah, because you don't expect to see bison in forested mountain landscapes in Banff. And so to sort of see these herds, and if you go to our website, you'll see pictures of them sort of on mountain slopes. And, you know, it's just habitat that you normally don't associate with plains bison. And so it's a really magical experience.
What were the conversations that were held with indigenous communities before this project moved forward to ensure not how it would work, but also whether it was a good idea?
Yeah, I think the first conversations were just about their role and their involvement in the project. And we started off on a good foot because they blessed the bison leaving Treaty 6 traditional territory when they were leaving Elk Island. They blessed the bison when they arrived in Treaty 7 traditional territory. And so right from the start, we started off on a good foot. They continue to be heavily involved. I chair the Banff National Park Indigenous Advisory Circle that consists of Treaty 7 nations and Métis Region 3. They continue to offer support both in terms of resources, in terms of their traditional ecological knowledge. Their elders have been out to visit the bison. And so it's just a really positive relationship and it's everyone seems to be winning.
What have you learned about the bison from them?
Well, so much. I mean, so much of their teachings we see on the ground. They tell us that bison are what we call ecological engineers, and they already knew that. They tell us that they will change the landscape, and we're finding that they are removing decades of thatch in prairie habitats and creating old wallows are being discovered. These wallows are habitat for other species, so biodiversity is being increased. You wouldn't think that a bison wallow would be able to support amphibian species, and sure enough, they do. You wouldn't think that birds would make nests from bison hair, and sure enough, they do. And these teachings are all things that our Indigenous partners have been telling us, not only historically, but also through their cultural monitoring work.
I mean, it suggests that in some ways that the bison deserve to belong there, that they need to belong there, that they're part of something larger that's there.
Absolutely. I think they're part of the ecosystem. There are traditional stories that tell us that bison used to be the primary food source for a lot of our Indigenous partners in the winter, because in the winter, that's where you'd find them in those high elevation sites. And so, yeah, I think they're part of the ecosystem and they are certainly surviving and thriving far better than we had expected, actually.
There were ranchers that were concerned about this project going forward. What were their concerns as you understand them?
Yeah, the primary concern was really disease. And so bison are an ungulate species. They carry diseases that can be transmitted to livestock and cattle. And so we put in place quite a few measures to mitigate those concerns. The first and foremost was we obtained animals from disease-free populations. Mm. And we have a certified vet on our staff. And so we tested these animals for disease on a regular basis, always negative. We also minimized the amount of contact that we had with bison and cattle. And so there's about a 30-kilometer buffer between the grazing allotments, and we always try to make sure that the bison were remaining in Banff National Park.
But it does speak, though, to the complications around reintroducing something. I mean, I just said earlier that in some ways it seems like these animals are part of that ecosystem, but they weren't, right? They were in past, but then they weren't. And so you're reintroducing, flying them in. There are complications. There are issues that you have to think about when it comes to that.
Yeah, for sure. There are complications and challenges for sure. We had a exclusion plan that we developed in partnership with the province. And so we have sort of a core zone that we have, and then we have buffer zones. And so the initial buffer zone around that core activity is if we detect a bison there, we'll kind of nudge it back into the core zone. And then there's a wider buffer zone that's closer to sort of other land use areas. And if bison appear there, we will take a more aggressive approach.
What does that mean, a more aggressive
approach? Right. And certainly you'll know, your listeners will know that out of the, you know, roughly around 100 animals that we have now, four males actually during the course of 5 years decided to venture further away. Two of those males we nudged back into the home population. Two of those other males had to be destroyed. And so, you know, we take our commitment to the province and those other land users very seriously. And once we discovered they were sort of far afield and could not be sort of hazed back, we decided to euthanize those animals.
What does that say about what happens as this population grows? Starts with 16, you're now under 100. I've heard estimates that could be upwards of 1,000 within the next several years. And so what will you do with 1,000 bison roaming through this park?
Well, I think first and foremost, population dynamics would suggest that the growth rate of these animals, which has been on average around 33% annually, will taper off. The wolves haven't discovered these animals yet, and so predation will likely take impact. So our expectation is that the growth trajectory that we've been seeing today will likely taper off. But in all honesty, you're absolutely right. I mean, we won't have a situation where we'll have, you know, 30 million animals, which was the historic distribution of this species, roaming around North America anymore. We will do what other jurisdictions have done. So for example, in Yellowstone, they have a combination of indigenous and non-indigenous harvest that keeps populations in check.
And something like that is possible here?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, we also can do what Elk Island does, and we could also be a source population for relocations and movement of animals away from Banff to other jurisdictions as well.
What does this story tell you about the possibility of this sort of work?
Well, I think it tells me it's really inspirational, because this was really a project that almost felt overwhelming at the front end, because the challenges were far greater than the rewards. And I think, you know, it sets the stage for other kinds of wilding type exercises.
Like,
and
what?
So you've heard about wilding globally, mm-hmm. where, you know, large areas are rewilded to native conditions. And so there's opportunities for doing that. And so, you know, of course, that caribou populations in Jasper are also struggling, as they are throughout North America. And so there's a potential for some work in Jasper to do some reintroductions as well as a breeding in Jasper. So it just opens the door for these types of large scale ecological works.
And that matters just finally because, I mean, these are iconic animals of this part of the country in some ways, right? But face real existential threats for a bunch of different obvious reasons. When you're able to kind of turn those threats around, that matters to you. Why?
It matters because, I mean, I couldn't think of anything more Canadian. You know, when we
flying in bison to a park where they used to be ages ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we were doing our engagement after we wrote our draft report for this bison program, we engaged with a lot of youth. And, you know, I wouldn't think that youth would have a connection with this because, as you said, you know, they weren't here before. They haven't been here a long time. The art of getting them here was a real challenge. But within one generation, even the youth that we were talking to who had often not actually seen these bison, the concept of having these large land mammals in a wild area, in a national park, really seemed to resonate with them. Mm. They were, to a person, to a child, not only supportive, but jazzed. You know, they were so excited to have this kind of notion of wildness and Canada in their backyard that, you know, it was really inspirational. And that's what it means to me.
It's fascinating work, and I'm really glad to hear about it and also that it's a success. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt.
Salman Rashid is the Field Unit Superintendent for Banff National Park. We spoke in our studio in Calgary last week.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.